moment. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome to what can only be described as the paramount episode in the history of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, the most important, the landmark, episode 550. It is the 550th episode. I mean, it feels like we've been doing this for 500 episodes after this year, because this year was just... it was something else. The Buffalo Bills, their season is over. We can finally, well, not finally say, but we can officially say that the Buffalo Bills 2019 season is over. It's weird that we got to say that in 2020. Happy New Year's, guys. But it's January 5th when we're recording this, and the Buffalo Bills lost their wild card round matchup to the Houston Texans last night. If you stopped watching after, like, the first 5 minutes of the third, you probably thought, oh, wow, they won. It's 16-0. They have a two-score lead. Wow. But no, it wasn't to be. The Buffalo Bills lost after a second-half collapse, and we'll get into that. We'll also get into maybe an off-season little mini preview, if you will. But I don't know. That'll depend on how crazy we go into the game. And I'm also going to look back before the start of this season. One of our episodes was like 6 or 7 bold predictions for the 2019 season. I'm going to look back at those and see how many of those we got right. So joining me to discuss these wonderful, ever wonderful topics, first, it's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, what's going on?
Just so much emotion last night. So many ups and downs, and I'm just completely drained, you know?
I feel ya. How
it was just, it was just a night. Like, once I started writing my article, I was like, how do you do this after such a game? How do people in the 90s live? How do you do that?
I don't know. I mean, I sat down after that game and wrote about how... we'll get into all this, but I just basically wrote, like, hey, it was still a successful season. It's not a wash, but... hey, maybe you guys feel differently. Also here, it's Justin DeLauro. D-Lo, how are you?
I'm doing great. Living through the 90s, I was primed for the disappointment that I faced yesterday. So it was a little more palpable to take.
See, McKenna and I, we've never experienced that.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, at least, I don't know about you, McKenna, but I wasn't like... a person when the Music City Miracle happened.
No, yeah.
I was there, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, I would have been like 2 or something, maybe?
Yeah, I was like 2. Or 3. I don't care. Yeah. Anyway.
I wasn't conscious.
Yeah, I was 2. But then, I didn't know what was going on. So this is the third playoff game I've been alive for, the second that I've been able to watch and know what's going on. And this game was better than the last one. This game was better than the Jaguars game, in which they scored 3 points. but they scored, 19 in this one? Still can't win. Oof. But, we'll get into all that. But before we get into these wonderful things, first, it's Premier Rich without Rich. Rich is sick again. I feel like he's sick, like, all the time. This is like, I'm like his teacher at school. I'm going to call him out for missing class. Like, oh, you're sick a lot, dude. But I got called out once. It was hilarious because side story. But junior year, I had this smart strategy, D-Lo. I'm sure every other kid has had this strategy. But if you ever notice this, you know, start calling kids out. But my strategy was miss the test day and then talk to kids about what was on the test, study that, and then make up the test later. It was a genius strategy. It always worked because I was a good kid. They would never expect that, you know, Kyle is just outsmarting the system here because I'm a good kid. So I was just outsmarting the system left and right. And then one time I stayed after to make up a test and my teacher called me out. He's like, you're absent for a lot of tests. And I was like, oh, it's weird. But that's weird.
It's a coincidence.
It's all coincidence. That's really weird. It happens in all my classes. I don't get it. But... they can't take my degree away now. They can't do that. But so yeah, let's I think that's... Oh, I was transitioning to Premier Rich. McKenna, what happened this week in soccer?
It was the FA Cup this week, actually. So no Premier League action. I don't know any of the scores, to be honest, except for Manchester United. They drew 0-0 with Wolverhampton Wanderers, who Manchester United have played, I think, quite honestly, like five times in the past year, due to just like FA Cup and League Cup, you know, and the Premier League. Obviously, it was a boring game. It was terrible to watch, and I don't know. I'll look up how the other results went for the FA Cup, but Manchester City obviously got they drew like Port Vale, which is I think a League One side.
Hell yeah, that's, dude!
That's nice. Great. They're just great. They're a great
they're playing
team.
Stoke.
They're fantastic.
Aren't they like one of the oldest teams?
Which one?
Port Vale. I could be wrong. They play in League Two.
That sounds about right. All of these teams are all formed like in the 1800s, so I don't know.
If I get this right, they've never played top flight football, but they hold the most consecutive seasons in the English Football League.
They're League Two. And they were founded in 1876 or 1879, depending on who you ask.
Disputed.
Yeah, it literally says disputed, speculated. This is great.
Port Vale is the official soccer club of the Kyle Selegi yes. Variety Hour.
All right, so speaking of official clubs, D'Lo.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I have a proposition for you. I just think you need to pick, like, a League One, a championship team to follow, and just go, like, all in.
All like, in? All right, let me pick some League One here.
Or, like, Port Vale.
League Two would be tough to watch. Like, I think championship would be better because, like, it's a more competitive league, but just go for it and just, like, go all in on this, you know.
Well, watching championship would be better than watching MLS.
Championship's awesome.
What did I say? Did I say Champions League?
No, you said championship.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm eating a small Hershey bar right now. I'm starving. I wrote a two... I already told you guys. I wrote a... Jesus, why do I do this to myself? Why do I do this? I wrote a 2,400-word article about what the Bills should do this offseason this morning. Who knows if it'll ever be published. We'll see what Nick says about it, but...
Just the writings of a madman.
It truly is. It's just my ramblings, but I'm just going to make Kyle Bill's blog. That's the next step in Bill's wire.
So I guess
you'd say
it's Buffalo Ramblings. Oh, it's Rumblings.
Oh!
Damn it!
Buffalo Ramblings! That is the name of my new blog, is Buffalo Ramblings. That is fantastic. Make sure to listen to the official Buffalo Ramblings. This is the official Buffalo Ramblings podcast. Oh, that's incredible. Can they hit me with a cease and desist for that?
I don't think so.
We've made it 8 minutes.
Hey, we're all on a Bills hangover right now.
It's definitely a hangover. Championship teams. There's some. I don't know. I could pick somebody. I could pick, like, the Blackburn Rovers or...
former champions of the Premier League.
Or Fulham. Or all these teams that I recognized before they were, like, you know, dropped to championship.
What about Barnsley?
Ooh. They're
Barnsley's 23rd right now.
Barnsley. They play in beautiful Barnsley, England.
England. What a beautiful country.
It's just... Let's look up. This podcast...
It's off the rails.
You can tell that we just don't want to talk about this football game because we're looking up images of Barnsley, UK. Oh, wonderful town.
Beautiful, beautiful city. Ooh.
The Cheektowaga of England. Barnsley. Oh,
no. I bet they don't have a Galleria Mall, though.
Guarantee it. Guarantee they don't have a Galleria Mall. All right, so I think that's enough whatever talk.
Well, I think, okay, my suggestion is for D'Lo, just support, like, Queen's Park Rangers. They're a London team. They used to be in the Premier League. And I think it'd just be an interesting story to see them maybe eventually make it back to the Prem.
Ooh.
And I think they have a really nice uni too, which is, like, the most important thing.
QPR, they beat Swansea City in the third round of the FA Cup today.
Oh, there we go.
5-1.
Ooh, Big win.
Ooh.
Big win. The biggest win. Oh, guys, World War III is starting. How do we feel about that?
I have glasses, so I can't get drafted, so.
Wait, is that for real?
I think so. I think you can't have glasses and you have to be in the military.
Yes! This is the best news!
So, I'm fine.
This is wonderful! Oh, I'm ecstatic. I don't think you can... I don't think they can draft people who are in college either, so...
I'm just gonna keep going. I'm gonna keep going. Like,
that's my plan. Just keep going, build up debt, and eventually get the degree, maybe. maybe. We'll see. We'll see how crazy I'm feeling. But, anyway. So, yeah. 10 minutes in, we've done nothing. So, let's get into the past. Let's look into the past. Let's look back to what was probably August or September when D'Lo, Jeremy Yuhas.
Yes.
Remember? Jeremy, Jeremy. He was on the podcast one time. This was his one. He was a one and done. His one appearance on the podcast. And each of us had two bold predictions for the Buffalo Bills 2019 season. And here's what they were. Jeremy said his first bold prediction was Cole Beasley makes the Pro Bowl. That did not happen. Ah, did Cole Beasley have a Pro Bowl-esque year or...
No.
I think he had a solid year. I would never put him in the Pro Bowl, though. Not this year, at least. He wasn't the Bills' best receiver, even, so...
Nope.
Second, he said, Bills win AFC East.
Almost.
Well,
almost.
It was close to week 16.
Yeah.
It wasn't wrong. And then, if you remember, he pulled a fast one on me, and he had a third prediction. Even though it was six bold predictions, a nice round number, he pulled a fast one, and he had a third. So to make the total seven. But this was his one correct prediction. It was his just throwaway prediction. It was right. He said Devin Singletary will be the featured back by midseason. And he made that prediction while LeSean McCoy was still on the roster. So,
wow.
Big ups to you, Jeremy. You got one right. Even though you cheated, you got one right. D'Lo.
Both of mine were wrong.
Here were your predictions. Number one, five Pro Bowlers.
We have five with alternates.
Hey.
You're right. That counts. I'm giving it to you, D'Lo.
Does that count?
I'm giving it. Hey, they were technically named to the Pro Bowl.
All right.
That's one.
I'll take it because Cole Beasley did not hit 100 catches.
Yes, you said Beasley will set Bill's single season record in receptions, which he did not.
He did not come close.
Did not come close. Maybe next year. And here are my predictions, also both of which were wrong. Number one. Bills' defense finishes first in total yardage. Tremaine Edmonds gets 140 tackles. They finish third in total yardage. Edmonds, I don't think, was close to 140. I think he was at like 110 or 120. Yeah.
He's not too bad.
He's had a good year.
He still had a very good year, and he still had... Look, I'm not mad about it. I think he had a great season. I think he showed improvement in every facet of the game, even if his stats took a dip. I think he just showed overall improvement. And the defense finished third in total yardage, and they are the reason why the Bills made the playoffs. So that's
I'll give that one to you. You know, even though it wasn't correct at all, but it was still, you know, close enough. And you know,
well, thank you. You cannot give this one to me. It was Christian Wade makes 53 man roster. That was just wrong. See, I said this the other week, but like just looking back on what we had as talking points at the beginning of this season is insane. Just like Christian Wade, should he make the 53-man roster? It's like looking back, it's like why did we spend significant time on the podcast talking about that? Hey, that's sports media though, right? I mean, there's shows that make entire programs out of talking about the Dallas Cowboys who are just
the worst.
There's nothing worth talking about in that circus, but
just boring.
It's just this isn't a Cowboys podcast. If it was, we would be we'd have a lot more viewers, obviously, but we'd have a lot more BS to talk about.
We'd have Jerry Jones every week.
Oh, I wish. He does like a weekly radio show on some pod or on some
yeah.
Whatever. It doesn't matter, but speaking of BS to talk about, the Buffalo Bills lost their wild card round matchup with the Houston Texans by a score of 22-19. And initially, it looked like it was going to be almost a blowout. they came out with a brilliant script in the first half. In the first quarter, they get the ball. Texans defer, so they get the ball. They march down the field. Was it a quarterback sweep that Josh Allen picked up the significant yardage on initially?
Yeah, it was a 42-yard sweep.
A 42-yard sweep, and then the Billy special, the Buffalo special, just getting a little sexy on him. John Brown throwing a touchdown pass to Josh Allen. You read that correctly. You didn't read anything. You heard it. You heard that correctly. John Brown to Josh Allen, touchdown. And then the offense, it didn't score a touchdown again, but I don't want to say it took a step back. I think throughout the first half, it consistently moved the ball for the most part. But they couldn't find the end zone, but they were getting in decent field position and kicking field goals. So, and the defense was just playing lights out. Nuke Hopkins, I don't think he had a reception in the first half. If he did, it was one.
Nope.
He had no receptions in the first half. Thank you, D'Lo. Deshaun Watson was just being limited. The defense was just clamping up, and the offense was just playing well. Then they come out in the third quarter. They stopped Houston again. Wasn't that the Trey White forced intercept or the forced fumble?
Yes.
I believe that was coming out of the gate. I think that was their first drive. Trey forced the fumble on Nuke Hopkins, and then Bills went down and scored again. So it was 16-0. And I remember looking at the clock, looking at the scoreboard, and saying, Houston has not been in this game whatsoever, but the Bills are only up two scores. And I was very nervous because that game should not have been close. Yet Houston only needed a few big plays to get back in it, and a few big plays they got. Deshaun Watson started turning it on. Nuke Hopkins he said before the game that Trey White's not even in like the top six corners that he's faced or whatever. Well, he made Trey White look like a not top six corner in the second half. It wasn't good. The defense, it's not even like it was a steep drop-off. It was just a gradual drop-off to, okay, they played well in the first half. Oh, they're not playing very well. Oh, this is getting worse. This is getting worse. And then in overtime, oh my God, they crumbled entirely. This team doesn't know what it's doing. It was a gradual decline into ineptitude. That's what this playoff game was, and that's... You don't deserve to win a playoff game if you don't come out in the second half. And after that first half, you don't deserve to win if you don't come out and put the game away. Which is something this team... We've talked about this for months on this podcast. Throughout the entire season, this team had difficulties putting games away. They let lesser teams stick around. Look at the Miami game, the first Miami game. They lost to Cleveland. They let teams stick around that shouldn't stick around. And that ultimately came back to bite them in this game. And I'm just doing so much ranting here. I'm going to go to you guys in a second here. But I literally saw somebody tweet today that the Bills lost to an inferior team. I would say the only thing... Buffalo probably has a better defense. I think Buffalo does have a better defense.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I think Buffalo has a better coach. But do not say that Houston is an inferior team when, A, they're in the playoffs... That was another thing, is Buffalo fans looked at this game as just, you know, they kind of looked past this game as, oh, they're going to win this game. No, Houston's a playoff team. They're a good team. Deshaun Watson is one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. Probably, you could say, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. DeAndre Hopkins, for my money, top three receiver. It's probably Julio, Michael Thomas, and DeAndre Hopkins. And Kenny Stills is a very good wide receiver. They have a decent offensive line. That offense, I don't care how good the Bills' defense is. That offense, you're not going to keep them off the board for an elongated amount of time, which is what we saw in the second half. So I don't want to hear Buffalo lost to an inferior team. Houston is as good, if not better, team than Buffalo. If Buffalo had a competent offense, sure, Buffalo's the better team. But Buffalo did not have a competent offense yesterday, especially in the second half, and that came back to bite them. I think I'm done ranting. My initial rant, D'Lo. I know you're eager to rant, so let it happen.
It's shocking. Okay, so they've had, I believe, 10 drives after their first scoring drive, and they scored a total of 12 points. After that, you're not going to win a playoff game. There's only so much that you can rely on your defense, and the defense was lights out in the first half. It was amazing. And you had to expect that Houston was going to make changes in the second half, even though Bill O'Brien's... Oh.
Bill O'Brien.
The smartest thing Bill O'Brien did was he stopped coaching and he said, Deshaun, do your thing.
Yep.
That was the best thing. Bar none. They stopped like trying to Oh, you know we're gonna beat Trey White. We're gonna put Hopkins inside. Why? They moved him back out wide the second half and they smoked us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean they whatever plan they had in the first half was terrible and they abandoned everything and it just wore us down. Buffalo, it's frustrating because all season we've settled for field goals and field goal attempts. And it bit us in the most important moment of the season. It bit us being able to only muster four field goals for the last three and a half, well, four quarters with overtime is ultimately going to be your undoing. And how much you're in a league where offense is always going to win out to some degree. As much as we have the cliche that defenses win championships, the league is made for people like DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson. So to keep that team down below 14 points was going to be
impossible.
It was improbable, yeah. So that was frustrating. It was frustrating that the Bills decided not to be aggressive on offense after that initial drive. It just feels like they dialed it back and did this driving Miss Daisy BS and tried to coast into the garage and they didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, defensively, I don't know what to say defensively because, yeah, they got beat a lot, but at the same time, they kept Houston under wraps for so long that it was like it was something was bound to happen. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. Taron Johnson went out, and then you lost your slot corner, and then you had Saran Neal, who did fine.
But I mean, and then he missed a sack.
He and Matt Milano missed a sack, which is so disappointing because we've loved Milano so much, and it's just that's the play that people are going to remember. Is that last play of the game, and it was a perfect call. Like,
yeah.
When they brought pressure on Watson, like, they really forced Watson to make some plays, and yeah, he made plays, and that's what he's supposed to do. He's a franchise quarterback, obviously. But at the same time, man, it's a disappointing end to a season that had promise because realistically, this team would have been going to Kansas City, which I think would have been a really interesting matchup, and instead, you know, now we lose out and we've got more questions than we had, you know, coming into the season. We had the same exact questions we had coming in. Can Josh Allen play four quarters of football? Can he dial it back from hero ball and be consistent? Do the Bills have secondary playmakers that can keep the offense moving? Can the defense, you know, keep the ship above water from sinking? Whatever. That was a horrible Titanic reference, but whatever the hell, can they do it for four quarters plus? Right. And all of these questions ultimately, and you know what? It's great. The 10 wins. I love the 10 wins. It's fine. It's great that it's taken two friggin' decades to get to 10 wins again. But at the same time, it's like, have we really progressed as much as we wanted in this season, in this third year under McDermott? And there's a lot of uncertainty right now with this group.
Yeah, it's so weird because I hadn't even thought of that point, but that is such a good point. The questions, there are so many unanswered questions.
Yes.
They had a whole season to answer these questions, yet we still don't know if Josh Allen is the franchise quarterback. I would lean towards he is. I think entering this season, I thought he was the franchise quarterback. I thought he showed a lot in his rookie year. He showed a lot this year too, but he also made a lot of boneheaded decisions, one of which probably his biggest boneheaded decision in this playoff game, which we'll get to, and didn't bite the Bills.
There were
a lot in this playoff game we'll get to, but we don't know if Josh Allen is the guy. He probably is, but I have the same stance on Josh Allen now as I did at the beginning of the year. Offensive depth. Is there enough firepower on this offense? I don't know, because at times the offense looks good. When Dable has a good script, I mean, Houston could not stop them at the beginning of last game, at the beginning of the playoff game. And then, I mean, is Dable a good offensive coordinator? I do not know, because he has scripts like that where they come out and just decimate Houston, and then they can only get four whatever field goals for the rest of the game. Like, I don't know if he's a good offensive coordinator. I don't know if it's weird play calling or poor execution. I said this in Slack earlier. I think I've come to the realization that throughout the season, I partially blamed poor execution on I've blamed, yeah, poor execution on bad play calling, when in reality it is poor execution. But that's not to say the play calling is consistently good.
Why do you have Pat DeMarco running a go route?
Yeah,
he is like 230 pounds, about 6'1". Not even 6'1". Why are you putting him in that situation?
Right. Well,
it's just like
that's a combination. Is like, A, why is Patrick DeMarco running the go route? B, why is that the receiver that Josh Allen decides to throw to?
Yeah.
What is going on? The playoff game. It's overtime of a playoff game, and you're throwing to a double covered Patrick DeMarco on a deep route. Why?
So okay. In fairness, I'm gonna try and dial it back. I'm gonna try not to dial. They put DeMarco out wide all year. Yeah.
They did, and
all
it was
year.
Never good.
All year, and it never worked.
They threw him to a couple
times.
Like
a quick, like one step drop, and they launched it out wide to him for 3 yards. The only reason that I think Allen throws that ball is because he's so under duress that he just wants to get rid of it. And
they
all
just
he saw
it
was
away.
A white jersey. Yeah, well, I know that, but he could have thrown
no
it.
Excuse. If you're throwing it away, but again, that goes back to the. I'm not going to swear. Almost said the F word again. That's just more work for me. But that goes back to the conversation we had after the New England game. Is that shows a flaw in the team building. Like, at the end of that game, you're under duress and you're forced to throw it up to a 5'9" Cole Beasley in the end zone. That shows you don't have a complete roster. In this game, overtime, you're forced to throw it up to a fullback double covered on a deep route. That shows you have an incomplete roster. That's a microcosm of the game. And I'm just so all over the place in this podcast because there's so many things to talk about with this game. I do not look. I just said I think Josh Allen's the franchise quarterback. I think he showed promise this year. I do not want to hear, at least until he proves me wrong, that Josh Allen is a big game quarterback. I don't want to hear about his fourth quarter
fourth
comebacks.
Quarter Josh. Fourth
I
quarter
don't,
Josh.
I don't want to hear about that. Josh Allen is not a big game quarterback. Throughout his career, he's had 4 or 5 games with even a semblance of national recognition on, with national media watching or national media paying attention. We're even just the lights are on. Not the lights aren't even on bright, they're just on. And he, in all but one of them, has sucked, has been near inept. You look at the Patriots game last year, the one he played, he sucked. The two Patriots games this year, the first one, he was awful, 3 picks. The second one, he was nothing more than mediocre. The Baltimore game this year, he was awful. It's the Pittsburgh game, he was just whatever. The Philly game, he sucked. There is the only nationally televised or game, the only game with some sort of national recognition that he played well in was Dallas. He was very good against Dallas, but that's the only quote unquote, I don't know the phrase, big game that he played well in is Dallas. And he's had like 5 opportunities to play well in big games, and he's only done it once. And yet I see people say he's a big game quarterback. He's not. He has shown no indication that he is a big game quarterback, because every time he can, all but one times, he has shown that he is not a big game quarterback. And in the first half of this game, it looked like he was a big game quarterback, but then in the second half, the lights just got to him. He fumbled that ball on the I don't even know when it was, but he fumbled the ball, I think, in the third quarter. Then after that, it was all downhill. I'll go to you, McKenna. Do you want to summarize what happened so I can limit my stroke over here?
All right. So I had a lot of thoughts coming out of the game. I think it was a great season. Like, you know, a lot of people, I think, wrote off Josh Allen after his first season because he was bad. Like, he wasn't that great. Like, he flashed at times what he could be. And other times it was like the Green Bay game, you know, he was just awful and was, you know, just making such bad decisions, bet. Like, he wasn't accurate at all. And coming into this season, he made big strides in both decision-making sometimes, and he has improved his accuracy. But I don't know if Josh Allen's a franchise quarterback because he can't handle the blitz yet. Like, he still hasn't shown that when, you know, defenders are in his face, he can make people miss with his legs, but he hasn't shown that he can make the play with his arm, which is concerning because now every defensive coordinator should be like, all right, we're just going to send, you know, five or six guys after him, and he's going to have to beat us, you know, throwing the ball, which he can't do. Like, he hasn't shown that he can do that yet, which is bad, you know?
Yeah.
It's in his sect.
Doesn't this team have hot routes?
No, I don't think so. I don't
like, don't you play Madden and you're like, okay, I see a blitz coming.
All right, so we're gonna take.
We're gonna just whip it to the hot route guy and hope for the best.
Yeah, like all right, that go route's gonna turn to a slant real quick, just because this has to get out of my hands.
And I know it's not Madden, but at the same time, I get what you're saying. Just bring heat on Allen, and if he can't avoid it,
he's done.
I mean, the odds are that you're gonna bring him down.
Yeah, and it's just like, and I part of that is Allen, part of that's Daboll. Like I've said all season, like, I've been harsh on Brian Daboll. I think some of it has been deserved, some of it hasn't been, but he can script a good first, you know, first series, first quarter, but he never found an offensive identity for the Bills, which is bad. Like, that is very concerning because we just talked about it so much. Are they a running team? Do they want to use, like, a quick passing team? Do they want to go, like, hit, like, the deep routes, sort of like what Houston does? What are they like? No, I don't know. And we got to watch them play 17 times this season, and they haven't proven who they are as an offense, and that hurt them going into this game because when things were breaking down, they weren't getting drives together. They couldn't go to their bread and butter, like whether it is like, you know, quick passing or a running attack, because they don't know what they are, and that's an issue. And I wouldn't be surprised if Daboll stayed, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Daboll was fired, because, like, when you have talent on the offense, which Bills do, they have a decent set of receivers. I still think they need a number one receiver, which we can talk about later or right now. I don't really care. like whether or not, like, you know, like, they need that guy. Like, people thought it might have been Duke Williams, but he had three drops on Saturday. Like,
yeah, we'll talk about him.
Duke Williams?
But continue. We'll talk about Duke Williams.
We can talk about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like the defense transitioning to the defense. They played really, like, they show what they were made of in the first half, but then I don't know if they coasted or they're just playing sloppy. What happened? But Leslie Frazier all season has been great on adjustments. Like, that's something he's always been great at, like, last season as well. Like, he was able to make sure that the defense was put in positions to succeed in the second half, which is great, but I don't think he made any adjustments or even the proper adjustments in the second half, which went on to hurt the Bills. Like, on that 3rd and 18, I think it was in an overtime, fourth quarter.
Oh, yep, yep.
Yeah.
The fourth quarter, I think.
I was talking to my sister. I was like, all right, they can't. Like, how are they going to get the first down here? You cannot let them gain 18 yards.
Yep, I've screamed.
And then,
yeah,
literally, I think they sent about, they probably sent, I think they sent three or four guys, you know.
Yeah.
They're not going to get to Watson, but, you know, maybe they were. Jerry Hughes had a great game. You know, he was on a different level, which was great to see. But you had about, you know, eight guys 25 yards down the field. All you have to do is just stand at the yard marker, you know, at the first down marker, and just be like, all right, come to us, you know, like, we'll have seven guys after you. And then, oh my, that just shows that, like, the Pat DeMarco play and this just kind of shows the Bills as a season, I guess. Like, so close yet so far, and just bad decisions. Yeah, I think I'm done ranting for now. I think I got it all out of me, because it's just, it was such an emotional game. Like, God, one positive though, to end this all, I think we've seen the return of Pouch Money, because
maybe
like at the end of like the entire back half of the season, I think after, I think the Cleveland game, he wasn't at his best.
Yep.
after that, I don't think he's missed a field goal since then. And
I don't think he has.
And I think that's one positive. And Corey Bohorquez, you know, he can spike a ball.
He can spike the hell out of a football.
And John Brown, elite quarterback.
Screaming for somebody to spike the ball. I'm pretty sure everybody in the house hid during that time. Because I lost my mind and I just needed somebody to spike the ball. And I was legitimately worried that the team wasn't going to be smart enough that they were going to run the offense out and kill time just to spike the ball. So thankfully, Corey could do it at the
football IQ. Football guy.
Football IQ. Doesn't matter what his QB rating is.
Nope, doesn't matter. But yeah, going back to that 3rd and 18, I was livid. I was screaming in my house. I was like, you pride yourself on being one of the league's best defenses, and you can't stop a 3rd and 18 in a playoff game? Give me a break. And you bring up a good point about the defense. I don't know if it's so much coasted in the second half because, look, they played very, very, very well in the first half, limiting them to no points, made DeAndre Hopkins a non-factor, made Deshaun Watson a non-factor. But Houston's just the type of offense that you're not going to keep them out of the game.
Like the Ravens.
You can limit them for as long as you want, as long as you can, but eventually the levee's going to break, and they're just going to start scoring points, and it did. And the Houston offense started to pick up points. And again, I don't think the Buffalo defense ever played particularly poorly. It was just the offense, and people want to blame.
They just needed one more touchdown.
Yeah, people want to blame the officiating in this game just because that's easy. It's like blaming the goalie in hockey. Just blame the defense, or blame the officiating is what I meant. I don't know what I'm talking about, but they just want to blame the officiating because it's easy and it takes the blame off of the team itself. But no, the Bills had ample opportunities to win this game. Do not blame it on the refs. The Bills offense, if they were just competent, if they score another touchdown, just like you said, McKenna, if they score another, just one touchdown, they win the game. They had opportunities in the fourth. They had opportunities in overtime to win the football game, and they didn't. And then, you blame it on the illegal backwards block or whatever by Cody Ford, which, whatever.
That was just a terrible call. And, like, you know when they have, like, the rules, like, of, like, experts, like, come in, and they're all saying, like, that's a terrible call. Like, he didn't really do anything wrong. And watching him, like, how is that a blindside block? Like, he hit him, like, in the chest, and the defender was just like, okay, you hit me. Like, it wasn't, like, a vicious hit. Wasn't a violent hit. And that probably it would have set them up for the game-winning field goal. If Hauschka makes it, we don't know.
The
Duke Williams drops a screen. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Duke Williams. Guys, why was Duke Williams active in this football game?
Oh,
why? I understand the reason why he was active. He showed he was okay last week, and he offers something that Bob Foster, who was activated over, he offers the physicality that Bob Foster doesn't. But Bob Foster. That's so good. He offers the versatility or the physicality that Robert Foster does not. But also, Duke Williams, he's like a 50-50 player. Sometimes he just makes insane catches, and then other times he's like, what are you doing? Just like, I think it was on the first drive. I think Duke Williams on the first drive came up with a big physical catch. And I texted my friend Matt. I was like, oh my God, I didn't say oh my God. I was just like, I apologize for any negative thing I've ever said about Duke Williams. And he said, apologize for everything you ever said about Dable too. And then I was like, Dable, you know, he scripted a good drive. Let's wait and see what happens. And I, you know, turned out my speculation was correct. But also I was incorrect to say that I apologize for everything Duke Williams has ever done. Because he dropped a touchdown where his hands were on the ball. Granted, that wasn't an easy catch, and I don't know if there's another Bills receiver who makes that catch, but also, your hands on the ball your hands are on the ball in the end zone. Come down with that catch. And like you said earlier, McKenna, he had a few drops in this game, including the one near the end of the game. Was that an overtime or the fourth quarter? It's all just a blur.
It was a back shoulder. Like, it was a like those two balls were like they were just good throws by Josh Allen. Like, just really good, really great throws. And that back shoulder hit him in the hands, the arms, the shoulder, the stomach, the leg. He still couldn't come down with it. And it's just like.
Then he had one late in the game or whatever where, I mean, Houston literally backed everyone off. Yeah. And Duke Williams just didn't catch the football. He was all alone. And that's partly it wasn't a great throw, which is why, again, we'll get into Josh Allen. I'm transitioning back to Josh Allen. But Duke Williams, I mean, I understand why he was active, but also play him throughout the year. I don't get it. Why? You bench him all year, and then in the playoffs, you're like, oh, yeah, he's good enough to be active now. Give me a break. Get out of here. And just Josh Allen, that goes back to the lights being too bright for Josh Allen. It's like he can't hit Duke Williams wide open when nobody is near him, and he can't make the throw. Again, Duke didn't catch it. Duke had the chance to catch it, and he didn't, but also that. And also, with what, like a minute left in the game, and he's running with the ball, like there's a minute left, and he laterals it back to Dawson Knox, who's just like, whoa, what are you doing? And he wisely bats it out. It's like, that is such a boneheaded play. That's hero ball, Josh Allen. You are taking away, you almost threw away the game, or, you know, lateraled away the game. There's no reason to lateral the ball there. Even if Dawson Knox catches it, he's probably going to get tackled from behind where Josh Allen was. That was such a boneheaded decision. And also, I believe it was the fourth quarter, late in the game, where Josh Allen, the thing was they needed a field goal, and the only thing was is that he couldn't take sacks. He could not take sacks to keep them in field goal range.
He loses 32 yards on two plays.
He loses 36 yards on two consecutive snaps, driving them to the other side of the football field. Like, come on, have some situational awareness. I realize he probably knows the situation. He knows he can't take sacks. But also, if you sense pressure in that situation, don't try to make something out of nothing. Throw the football away.
So, you know how a lot of times throughout the season, we've said this is the ultimate Josh Allen experience?
So many times.
This has been the ultimate Josh Allen experience.
It was just...
Save
us, D'Lo.
Our only hope.
Bill Barnwell tweeted something really interesting, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I can't find it right now, but it was something like, whatever your opinion is about Josh Allen, you're right.
Very true.
Yeah. Because we went through all... It's like the stages of denial. Like, you go through all those. Like, we went through the stages of Josh Allen yesterday. Pretty much it was the flair for being amazing and doing these just stellar plays where you're like, you know what? This guy physically can do things that only a handful of players in the league can do. Mm-hmm. And then, like, just as high as he can go, it's just as low where you're wondering what is going on with some of these throws, what's going on with these decisions, how are we going back 30-plus yards? I mean, granted, it was like – and it was a jailbreak on that 4th and 27 because, like, the left side of the line got smoked, whatever – the Texans.
Don't say that
because
Quentin Spain's about to add
just work,
you real quick.
But I would just love Josh Allen to like move to his right instead of turning to his left and having his back to the field. I mean, I don't know. I'm not 6'5", 237. I don't have his physical gifts. I don't know what's going through his head. But just to be able to move that way and square your shoulder and try and get a throw off is really tough. It's just really challenging because 2 years ago, in April of 2017, after he was drafted, I wrote about how he had the highest ceiling and possibly the lowest floor because he's able to make these amazing plays. But then the plays, you know, there's like that flip side. It always balances out, like somehow, like regression to the mean of like good and bad with Josh Allen. And we ultimately saw that yesterday. And I think the second half was big because he went in and he tried to do way too much. And he got over his head. And he didn't, you know, we talked about taking what the defense gives him, taking what the defense takes him, avoiding sacks. And in the second half, he got away from that and tried to make the ultimate hero ball play, and it just would not materialize.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. See, I'm having the longest stroke ever on this podcast. I just cannot speak. But it was just... I don't even know what else to say about this game. I think we've said everything. Is Josh Allen looked very good in the first half, and the second half just looked like everything every doubter's ever said about him ever was right. Because he just... The moment got to him, and he was just making boneheaded play after boneheaded play.
Hey, do you know who would look really good running a fly route on a 50-50 ball?
Who?
Duke Williams, your 6'3 receiver, for the reason that you dressed him and not your fullback.
That's valid.
Good...
Hey, but do not act like they did not try to force Duke Williams at the end of the game.
Oh,
they force fed him. Trying to get him to the end zone, they didn't do anything.
How could they not find Beasley? How could they not get plays for Beasley to get open?
Against a banged up secondary. Oh my
god. That was the thing. That was a storyline heading into this game, is that Houston struggles against slot receivers and Cole Beasley's largely a non-factor. What did he have?
Four
receptions for 44 yards. I wouldn't say that's a non-factor. I lied. Then I looked at the stats and I recanted my opinion.
That's not a great non-factor game. Because he was a non-factor throughout most of the game, because what did he actually provide except for, I think, he provided field position for the game-tying field goal, which,
yep.
I mean, it wasn't necessary because they still would have taken the field goal from where they were anyway. He was a non-factor. John Brown was a non-factor throughout a majority of the game.
Yeah.
Like, John Brown struggled with drops, too, and I don't know. Like, this was just, like, everything.
It was,
happened.
Like, everything. Everything the second half undid all of the good.
Yeah, that's really it. And it's just, I don't know. Corey Bohork has had a couple good punts. I don't know. Like,
hey, can we stop a two-point conversion?
No.
We're not allowed.
Is
that possible? Like,
sorry, those are the rules. Can't do it.
It's written in the NFL contract. Bills cannot stop two-point conversion.
Like, absolutely not.
But the Patriots lost. That's good.
Oh no!
I know that doesn't even, like, I don't know, that like Schadenfreude doesn't even like make me happy, because, like, you know what, we should have won this freaking game.
Should have.
Well, now we got to get rid of Tom.
Tom
sucks.
Tom's leaving. Tom, get rid of him. He's a bum.
I'm real sad, you know, because I like Vrabel. You know, I got his jersey over my mantle.
Next to Teddy Bruschi.
Yeah, next to Teddy Bruschi.
But you know, I burned that Antonio Brown jersey.
Joycey. He's down there in Nashville. You know, and it sucks. I want to like the Titans. I like Dolly Parton. But I...
That's good stuff.
I just can't do it. But, yeah, so we'll see what happens with Tom Brady. Is there anything else to talk about with this playoff game? I think the offense just kind of wasn't competent. Josh Allen struggled in the second half. Offensive line, I thought, gave Allen protection throughout the majority of the game, so I really don't want to talk about the offensive line. And the defense played well. It's just you can only stop Houston for so long. Does that sum it up well enough?
Yes. Can we give the ball to Devin Singletary more?
And not
I
to
want
Frank
to.
Gore?
I very much like Devin Singletary.
All right, so Kyle, I'm like all on board Derrick Henry to Buffalo this offseason.
Well, you're going to hate me.
Why? Because
I've done like a near 180 on Derrick Henry.
Son of... All right, I'm taking the bandwagon
now. I know.
Now.
Well, here's my thing. With this team... Okay. Look, I'll preview my article that I wrote that isn't out at this point. But I just wrote a 2,400-word article about what the Bills should do this offseason. I don't know if I want to invest significant money in the running back position. I really like Devin Singletary. I don't know. I think he's more of a workhorse than I initially thought he was going to be. He's Le'Veon Bell-esque. He's Le'Veon Bell-light. And I think if you give him the opportunity to be your workhorse and to be your featured back and not have to give the 36-year-old Frank Gore the ball in place of him sometimes, I do think Devin Singletary is going to be a very good running back, and I don't think you need Derrick Henry to compliment him, because I think that just takes the ball away from Devin Singletary. So what I would want as opposed to Devin Singletary, is like a speedy back. Because Devin Singletary, we've talked about this 100 times on the show, but Devin Singletary is, he's kind of a complete running back. I think I called him one time like a jack of all trades, master of none. He is, he's powerful, but he's not a hammer. He's shifty, he's elusive, and he's fast, but he's not, he's speedy, but he's not fast. So you can really compliment him with anything, but I think the straightforward running, the downfield running, is probably the best part of his game because he is powerful, he has a strong lower body, and also, even if he's not running over guys, he's making a miss with his legs. So I think you complement that with speed, so I would want a speedy running back to compliment him.
So but, like a Kenyon Drake, for example, who is a free agent.
Oh, I don't think Arizona's letting him leave, but if Kenyon Drake's available, sure. Like, I want Tariq Cohen, but good, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You can't have Cohen. You can't have a 5'6 and 5'7 back in your backfield.
Well, if they could
get,
like... Can
you imagine if that happened?
Buffalo, that would be great. You know who I love in the draft, but they're not going to draft him just because he's the same height as Singletary, is Anthony McFarland from Maryland. He's seriously just like Devin Singletary, but they're not going to draft him because they don't need two Devin Singletaries. I think McFarland has more power probably than Singletary, but yeah, I just like TJ Yeldon, but good. TJ Yeldon, but faster. That'd be great.
So there's this running back named LeSean McCoy from
Kansas
City.
I've heard about him.
He's a free agent this season. I don't know. You take him. Why not?
Yeah, I think he's pretty good from what I remember. I haven't seen him I haven't heard of him in a long time. But so yeah, guys, we have a few minutes here left on this show. Let me run down so you guys don't have to read my 2400 word article. Audience, you do have to read it. Contractually obligated. You guys don't though. So here were my suggestions for this off season. I had 6 suggestions. You guys tell me what you think. One was re-sign Jordan Phillips on a front-loaded contract. You can give him the 10 mil he wants, but front-load it so it doesn't burden them in 3 years from now. Re-sign Shaq Lawson, Quentin Spain, Kevin Johnson, and Isaiah McKenzie. How do we feel about that?
Good so far.
I think we're okay.
McKenzie, I'm a little up in the air about still. I think I like him as a player, but Daboll does not use him enough. Okay, keep going.
Number 2. Was further clean up the salary cap, primarily by cutting Trent Murphy. I like Trent Murphy. Like I wrote in my article, recency bias. People are going to be like, why would you cut him? He has 4 sacks in the last 2 games. That's the first time he's done anything consistently since signing here. That's the first time. And he has 9 sacks in 2 years total, and he's going to make $9 million next year. They can free up $7 million by cutting him, and that can be the money they re-sign Shaq with. So
would you rather have Shaq Lawson than Trent?
In a heartbeat.
Okay, that's interesting. I think Shaq's developed a lot the past season just due to the fact that he's like playing consistently and not injured. Which I could go either way about them. I think Shaq Lawson's he is very good at stopping the run, which is something Buffalo needs. So you know, and he's evolved a little bit as a pass rusher. Like he's gotten better throughout his time in Buffalo.
Yeah, he had a career high this year. 6.5.
Yeah, it's not bad.
My third was get the Tre'Davious White contract done. Just get that done this offseason. Reset the quarterback market before someone beats you to it. And then it becomes a problem out of your control. Make Trey the highest paid right now so that the freaking Rams don't re-sign Jalen Ramsey to a $20 million a year contract. And then you're like, oh shit, I have to give Trey $20 million. So I said lock him up to something like 5 years, 82.5 mil, something like that, like in the $16 to $17 million a year range. That would reset the market. That would make him the highest paid corner. But that's not crazy. That I still like that contract. So then I had sign a defender, either Yannick Ngakoue, who would replace Trent Murphy, who would be crazy, Bud Dupree, or Patrick Onuwusor. I think any of them or a combination of them would be terrific additions. I think if anyone out of those, I really like Ngakoue. I think Ngakoue is very good, but I kind of would lean towards Bud Dupree. I think Bud Dupree is kind of underrated.
Is he a defensive end or an outside linebacker? Or is he like
play a hybrid? Exactly. He was a 3-4 edge rusher, which is basic, that kind of translates to defensive end. But I wrote in my article, I was like, he can kind of fill that Lorenzo Alexander role.
That'd be awesome.
As you can have him play in coverage. He's not a great coverage linebacker, but he's improved, Bud Dupree has. And then you can have him as a situational down lineman. I really like that fit. I don't think he's going to leave Pittsburgh. I don't think they're going to let him fit or leave Pittsburgh. But if he does, if he hits the market, I think I'd rather have Bud Dupree than Yannick Ngakoue. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing Yannick Ngakoue right, but it's fun.
It, honestly, I think that's actually how you pronounce it. I'm not even kidding. Like, that's pretty good.
And then, I know this is bad. I just talk shit about the offense for an hour. But I basically said, hey, offensively, don't make any, like, huge signings. Like, the best free agents are A.J. Green, Emmanuel Sanders, and Larry Fitzgerald, who are all old. A.J. Green and Emmanuel Sanders have, like, respective Achilles injuries, and Larry Fitzgerald's never leaving. He is never leaving Arizona, I don't think. And Amari Cooper might be a free agent, but I don't think Dallas is going to let him leave after trading for him. Unless unless they do give Dak $40 million and they just don't have room for him, which is whatever. And then I also had, or so my basic point on offense was like, sign a few depth guys, some shifty guys, some guys who you think can complement, but no big names. And then I had draft Laviska Shenault, who Laviska Shenault is just an insane player. If you haven't watched Laviska Shenault, do yourself a favor. He is so fun to watch. He's not the prototypical 6'4 boundary guy. If you want him, you probably want T. Higgins. He would probably be your choice in the draft with the early 20 pick that they're going to have. But Laviska Shenault, I mean, they used him everywhere in Colorado. They used him outside, in the slot, as a running back sometimes, as a wildcat quarterback. They just got him the ball. So he's not your prototypical number one receiver, but I think he can be your number one weapon. I think he's a guy who you can just get the ball to however you can get it to him, and he'll make plays happen. He'll make it happen. And I mean, this sounds weird. This is the weirdest thing I've ever said about another man, but his lower body is just so strong.
Yeah.
He moves piles with his legs. It's just, he's kind of like Devin Singletary, but bigger and a wide receiver.
Yeah, he is,
I guess
he's
is
a
how
I
would describe
when
him.
The ball is in his hands, which is like, he has great hands. And once he gets like, he's a physical mm-hmm. receiver, which is like, this draft class doesn't have too much of. They have like 50-50 guys, but not a guy who, once he gets the ball, he's like, all right, I'm not going to try to get around you. I'm just going to run through you. And he still has some nice moves. Like, I, you know, watching his highlights, I've been, you know, the past couple of days, like, he is like an all, like, yeah, just a weapon. Like, get the ball in his hands, like almost like Devin Singletary, where just he's money with the ball. Like, I think he, in college, he had like over 2,200 scrimmage yards, 17 touchdowns.
Yep.
Coming from like a bunch of different positions, he was also a returner for a little mm-hmm. bit. So, like, this wide receiver class is deep with talent, like, probably the deepest we've seen, I think, like, in our lifetime, Kyle.
Yep, at least our lifetime, yeah. Yeah. It's no Justin Blackmon class.
But I think it's, a lot of these, like, you can't go wrong with, like, a lot of these receivers.
Yeah, that's why the Bills, it kind of sucks because they have $88 million in cap space and there's no, like, premier offensive free agents for the most part, at least not yet. We'll see if there's any cap casualties or whatever. But I mean, it's a good year to need a wide receiver because there's a lot of good ones and there's a lot of guys who do different things. So, like, I wouldn't be mad with selecting T. Higgins, or if CeeDee Lamb's there, I wouldn't be upset with CeeDee Lamb. I just think Laviska Shenault just offers something that those guys do not, and I think he's the best fit for a Dable offense out of these guys. So, if Dable's even the guy, if not, I'll have to redo everything. But yeah, I would describe Laviska Shenault for a Bills fan as, imagine you took a picture of Devin Singletary, and not even a picture, just player-wise. This is player-wise. You took Devin Singletary into Photoshop, you made the picture a few inches taller,
like,
and then you added
taller
dreadlocks. That's Laviska Shenault. He's very good, and I think He could be a high volume guy just because you can get the ball to him from the slot. You can do direct snaps to him, handoff, screens, outside, inside, whatever. Just get him the ball and he'll make plays happen. So that's my my number one priority for the Bills this offseason, probably, is draft Laviska Shenault. So any thoughts here, guys, on this potential offseason, or just wrap up thoughts on the playoff games in general? I'll go to you, D'Lo.
They need a playmaker.
Like Laviska Shenault.
Laviska Shenault. think about it. You look at what Houston did. They essentially were backed into a wall when they say we're going to put the ball into Watson's hands and get the ball in DeAndre Hopkins' hands, and essentially Watson would lead the way and Hopkins would supplement. But I just, watching that game, I thought when the Bills were coming back, it was, yes, we love the team first atmosphere and effort of the Bills. When they need to make a play, who's going to make it? And that was the worry. And that's why I think going into the offseason, they got to find somebody who's going to be their number one. I think the offseason is going to be really interesting for Bean because he's got a lot of young guys who are on entry-level contracts. So whoever he signs this year is going to impact the long-term, you know, cap space for this team in 2 to 3 years when they have to sign Allen and White and Milano and, you know, whoever else, Singletary. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see. Do they dive in and say, you know what, we need to really take a bigger step forward in 2020 and sign some guys who are going to produce? Or do we kind of take a step back and go for, like, the B-level players that we kind of signed this year? You know, Beasley and Brown are great guys, but at the same time, they're not like number ones. They're great players. They're great complementary players. So if they kind of take a step back, it really says, you know what, we're keeping our salary free because we believe in, you know, Josh Allen and Tre'Davious White and the rest of the crew. I just looked on Spotrac right now, or Spotrac, however you want to pronounce it, and they said possibly, like, Allen is possibly worth $29.1 million a year on his next contract.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. It's just, you know, you're going to be dedicating that. They also gave Trey White, which I think is a great figure. I think it's too low, but they said, you know, Trey White's a 14.5.
Oh, no.
And I think that's too low.
That's too low.
Because then the next line, they're giving Matt Milano like 13. So that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
But
how much are they leaving Edmonds?
See, that he wasn't on there, right? So I got to go back.
Oh. That doesn't make sense.
I know it doesn't make sense.
If you're giving Matt Milano $13 million, you're going to have to give Tremaine Edmonds a little bit more, because
I mean, Tremaine, like do you give Tremaine $15 million and Allen $30 million
I think you give Trey White and Tremaine Edmonds similar money, honestly, because I see them as equal value for the Bills defense. Yeah. I think the front office is as well.
Yeah, it just says calculated market value, and that's what it says for the top three on the Bills.
I mean, if you are a parent who has a kid growing up, why would you let them play any position other than quarterback? I mean, quarterback's where the money is. You can be Josh Allen and make $30 million a year. Like, come on. Why would you let them do anything else?
Ryan Tannehill's going to get paid eventually.
Jameis Winston's going to get paid. Dak Prescott's going to get paid. It just doesn't... You could be Jameis Winston. You could throw 30 picks and still get $25 to $30 million a year. Parents, let your kids play quarterback. Jeez. But yeah, that's a good point you bring up, just about how they need a number one receiver, a number one playmaker. And honestly, this is going to sound rude, but that it hasn't stopped me before about Josh Allen, but there are better deep threats in this class than Laviska Shenault. I wouldn't even describe Laviska Shenault as a deep threat. But also, I don't trust Josh Allen to get a player who's known for his go-up-and-get-it ability and play in the intermediate to deep routes. I don't trust Josh Allen to get him the football. I just don't. So that's why I like a Laviska Shenault, a guy who you can just get it to him near the line of scrimmage and let him do the rest. That's why I like Laviska Shenault. So, McKenna, any final thoughts here on anything we talked about?
I love Laviska Shenault. You already have a great, like, you know, like, little chant for him. Hasta la visca.
Yep, hasta la visca.
That's like, you can't go wrong there. But
that's good.
I've seen a couple. I've been like looking at the mocks, you know, as they're coming out, and I've seen a couple where Buffalo picks up a receiver And then Jonathan Taylor in the second round, the running back from Wisconsin.
Oh!
Which, like, don't even get my hopes up.
I would die.
That would be a great – that, like, Buffalo just needs to go all offense in the draft. I don't care. I mean, obviously they won't do that because they'll scout, like, some random-ass defender from – Florida Polytechnic Culinary Institute, you know, great in the slot. But the defense is good, and there are a lot of it's a defensive heavy free agent market, so you know, spend your money wisely there, and then just go. There's so much talent on offense in this draft, so you know,
dude, if they get, I wouldn't be opposed if LaVisca's not there and like the Ruggs kid, the wide receiver,
from LA.
What's his name? CeeDee Lamb's not there. Jerry Judy's gonna go like top 10. Oh, so yeah. If Lamb, Ruggs, Chenault, or Higgins aren't there, I would love Travis Etienne out of Clemson. Yeah. I think he would be a perfect complement to Singletary. And also, you know, Jonathan Taylor in the first round, go for it. I don't care. Or Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma, linebacker, but he's just an insane athlete. So that would just be an insane linebacker core. But I think, hey, this is fun, guys. Look how passionate we are. The whole season, we're just like, this team, I don't know, man. The season's over and it's off-season stuff, and we're like, oh, I'm ready to talk about this stuff now. It's fun. But I think that wraps up this discussion. The playoff game was bad, but there is still hope to be had because the Bills have $88 million in cap space, and they're probably going to improve this offseason, so we'll see. So I'd like to thank you guys for joining me to discuss these wonderful topics. D'Lo, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at JDeLauro.
McKenna, where can people find you on Twitter?
At McKenna Middle.
You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Selege. You can follow Bills Wire on Twitter at The Bills Wire on Instagram at variations of that. So I just did a quick look on HofbrauhausBuffalo.com to see if there's any updates. They haven't updated their website since September. So there you have it. So thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week with something else. Bye-bye.